the greatest game when we had our pitch on Stanley Park. In season 1891, the Toffees' history had begun. We beat them all and the Football League was won.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the Fuck Off Everton podcast. We're recording this on midday-ish on Wednesday after the Bournemouth capitulation, so we've had a bit of time to try and come to terms with what happened and the minutiae of it. But how are you feeling about it, like with a little bit of time to reflect, Bill?
Well, it stings, doesn't it? It really stings. I mean, we've seen some capitulations in our time, but that was pretty nuclear, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I'm just looking at some stats here that Everton Stato, which is quite good count on Twitter, quite posted. First 86 minutes, Everton, goals 2, shots 17, on target 8, big chances 5, Bournemouth 0. 87 yeah. minutes onwards, Bournemouth 3 goals, 6 shots, 5 on target, big chances 4, Everton 0.
Incredible.
So yeah, I don't know how you explain that. I think it's a confluence of factors, isn't it? I think.
What do you see as being the main factor there?
I just think the team was sort of exhausted, to be honest. And I think there is a thing with a fragility in our team that once we concede one, we seem to concede a few, you know? And obviously, having conceded quite a few in the other two games, I do think there's a bit of a fragility. And then, obviously, a lot of people have pointed to the fact that Dyche seemed to have two subs that he kind of made anyway, even though things were falling apart. I don't know. We'll get on to the substitutes later, but I suppose, you know, they're obvious player errors as well. It's almost like the whole team stopped, doesn't it? I mean, Coleman didn't stop the cross for one of their goals. There was no marking on certain other goals, and Tim Irabunim didn't track his runner for the header. You know, there was quite a few things where the players just literally switched off, whereas almost like they went into sort of a bit of a panic mode, I felt like.
Yeah, it was really strange to witness. I mean, I'll come to the sort of collapse before the positives, but from 87 minutes on, there was just a collective falling apart. I mean, first, like some of the substitutions, I mean, I think some people are sort of retrofitting some aspect of that, like people complaining about Ndai having come off. I mean, from what I sort of picked up around me and my sort of feel on it was that at that point in the game, it wasn't a bad change to make. You know, you've got 3 minutes to go, you're 2-0 up, go a bit more compact. And it's also, you know, I like that a player like that can come off and get the round of applause that he deserves and that kind of thing. I can see the argument for leaving on that outlet who can drag you up the pitch, but I don't think there were massive grumblings other than the fact that people like to see the entertainer stay on the pitch just for purely entertainment reasons. But from a tactical point of view, I think most people accepted, yeah, we're just going a bit more compact, see out these last few minutes that we've got. And for the first couple of minutes, it was fine. You know, Decore came on and actually made a couple of very good chances, or at least one very good chance. And then I think he was involved in the build-up to another one where McNeil put a cross in, but no one got on the end of them. But it looked like it was working. But then this collective madness that seemed to affect the team, particularly the defenders. I mean, Mykolenko's taken quite a lot of criticism, and I think rightly so, because for a left-back that tends to be, if anything, too defensive, you know, we probably complain that he doesn't offer enough going forward, he doesn't overlap enough. He chose a game when we're 2-0 up with a couple of minutes remaining to start just bombing on. Yeah. And that was just madness. And then, you know, Tim was tiring, absolutely should have come off. That's a criticism I'm 100% on board with. But instead of just sitting in and conserving what little energy he had, he kept, again, you know, breaking forward, and he was giving the ball away because he was exhausted and then he was too tired to be getting back, which is a failing both on his part and the manager's part for not spotting that and not reacting
Yeah, and, you know, he is a young player as well, isn't he? You know?
Yeah, but Adrissa was doing the same thing. You know, you think, you know, he's right next to him, 36-year-old midfielder. He should be dragging him back and also sitting in himself. But they were all, you know, trying to break beyond the defensive line of Bournemouth. You know, why are you doing that at 2-0 up? And you can see Dyche on the touchline, you know, screaming at them to get back into their shape. But even Keane and Tarkowski were stepping up way too far, you know, and Coleman as well. You know, these are three very experienced defenders, you know, Coleman, Keane and Tarkowski. You think they're the ideal players to be doing the simple thing and just sitting in, just getting more compact. And it was just insane to witness it. I mean, the first time we got caught out, it didn't lead to a goal, but you think, okay, they've seen that space being exploited in behind Mykolenko. He'll sit in that, but he still kept bombing on and then getting dragged out of position. And he was at fault, at least in part, for all three goals. But it's hard to fathom, like, what happened there. I mean, you're right about the fragility, which, you know, is a hangover from several seasons now, you know, this sort of collapse. But it seemed like we'd started to get hold of that under Dyche, and that he'd kind of squeezed that out of them a little bit. But, you know, the sort of memory of it and the habit of it obviously still lives on in quite a few of them, and that lack of belief. But you think that's more reason then to just do it simple, you know, just get compact, you know, sit back and see out this advantage. You know, even when it got to 2-1, okay, you think, okay, we've been caught out a couple of times there, now let's just see this out. But they didn't. And I'd say in large, that is down to a failure of players to do the basics. But as I said, Dyche definitely does take some responsibility, particularly just where Tim Iribenham is involved, because you got a tailor-made replacement on the bench there in Ghana, not fully fit, but, you know, we can give you 5 or 10 minutes, surely, just to see a game out. And, yeah, I was just sat there with my head in my hands at the end. I just couldn't believe it. And yet, you know, on some level, you kind of can, because that's just Everton, isn't it? Finding new ways to grasp defeat from the jaws of victory.
Well, it makes it even more galling, doesn't it, in a way? I mean, it hurt me much more than the Spurs defeat, to be honest, even though we got smashed 4-0. Because, obviously, we played so well, hadn't we? Had that hope, and we'd done so well for, like, 87 minutes, controlled the game. And I think there is a bit of a shock element to it, isn't there, when you've controlled a game so much, so on top, and then suddenly there's a turnaround. Obviously, you know, the fact that Bournemouth made 5 subs... That was always my fear with Bournemouth. They've got a lot of pace. They're not, like, particularly amazingly skillful. And they haven't got, like, many outstanding players. But they've got a lot of pace. They've got several wing forwards with a lot of pace. And so, you know, they made 5 changes in a go. And that is half a team. That is fresh legs with pace against an ageing back four. And Tarkowski, to me, just doesn't look... He doesn't look at it, you know.
He's carrying an injury, and they're trying to manage him through it, aren't they? And it's the same with Mykolenko as well.
Well, this is it. It goes back to the, you know, pre-season. It goes back to fitness, doesn't it? Partly, I think. And that is always the pinch point, is always at the end of a game, isn't it? When you've given a lot, then your concentration. I agree with you. Mykolenko definitely is at fault for a couple of the goals, and there didn't seem to be the protection of the back four as well at that point. You know, they were just running onto us, you know.
Yeah.
So obviously Garner and Tim Iribunham and the wings were kind of... But I do think that there is a criticism of Dyche in terms of his substitutions. We've talked about it before. They're often questionable, because they often seem to be like for like, and they often...
Well, people have said that, but that clearly wasn't the case, because you're bringing on a midfielder to space and Decore, and you're taking off the attacking player.
I know, but that was... But in his mind, that's a number 10 for a number 10, but I agree with you.
It wasn't. I mean, Ndiaye was playing the majority of the game on the left and cutting inside, and he changed the shape. You know, he went from a fairly open 4-3-3 or sort of like 4-2-3-1 at times, into a solid 4-4-1-1 with the Corey dropping in to make it a 5, which theoretically is a good move.
That has worked for us in the past, and I do agree that should make us more solid. But the thing with Decore is he just seems to have I don't know, falling off a physical cliff. I don't know. He just, he has, and also he's one of those players, if you really want to keep the ball, is he really the player you would bring on? I'm just putting the opposite side of the argument here now.
Well, you probably weren't, you're not looking to keep the ball at that point, because you know, you know, keeping the ball is quite tiring, and we've had the majority of it for 87 minutes, and like up to that point, I don't think the change was wrong. You know, what was wrong was not bringing Erebunimov as well.
Yeah, bringing Garner on, because I think Garner can shield the back four and he can keep the ball. And I know what you're saying, it's not just about keeping the ball, but on the other hand, if you do keep the ball, you run down the clock and the game is over, literally, because there was only minutes left. Wasn't there an instance, I know you went to the game, so you know more than me, but wasn't there, and I only saw the highlights, but wasn't there an instance when they had the ball down the other end of the pitch and Tecourie had it and they kind of nicked it and just went back down? Whereas if he did just like stuck his arse into the player and kept it in the corner flag, literally the game might have been over.
I think it was another case of, you know, trying to go for the third goal rather than keeping the, you know, the score at 2-0 and then leaving those spaces in behind. I mean, you know, I say it did nearly work. You know, Tecourie got into the box and put a lovely ball across the 6-yard box and, you know, nobody threw themselves at it, which was frustrating. But, you know, if that goes in, obviously the game is completely killed off. But, yeah, it was, you know, poor decision-making individually at times. And say, you know, one or two changes that I think should have been made. I think as much as I have and still do defend Dyche, I still can't understand why Erebunim didn't come off. I know that sometimes, you know, the play doesn't break up, you know, ball doesn't go out of play, you can't make the change, but I think it should have been made before this sort of collapse was beginning. You know, he should have come off probably on 80 minutes. I think it was clear that he did need some fresh legs on there, but, you know, he didn't make the change. And even if Tin just sits in and Idrissa just sit in, you know, it wouldn't have been that much of an issue. It was the fact that they were pushing up and Mykolenko was pushing up.
It's a bit mad, though, in a way, isn't it? Because as a team, we're meant to be, or we were built on sort of solid defence, you know, being stingy and stuff. Do you think there's an element of if you sort of, that we were sort of employing a more sort of almost attacking bent? And is there a kind of element of like, how can you, once you've flick that switch, you know, even if they're scoring goals and coming back, it's like, how do you just, you know, can you just flip it back? That's what I'm trying to say. It's like,
yeah, you should, these are professional
footballers. You should be able to.
These
I
are
agree.
Very well drilled professional footballers who are
it's
solid.
It's kamikaze stuff, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of the issue with the defence at the start of this season, I mean, we all talk about how great we were defensively last season, but, you know, we lacked that cutting edge, and we've tried to sort of address the lack of cutting edge in the transfer market. But the problem we've now got, having done that to a degree, is the fact that, you know, pretty much our first choice defence is injured to some degree. You know, obviously Branthwaite's not back yet. Tarkowski's been carrying a bit of an injury and is sort of being managed through it. Mykolenko, again, you know, he's had a few injuries from the end of last season and over the summer in the Euros and everything. Clearly nowhere near fit, but we don't really have any alternative. And then there's the obvious right-back issue, which clearly they're trying to just sort of stopgap solve that issue with Young and Coleman dovetailing until they can get Patterson in and fit and have, you know, give him a proper run and see if he's going to actually cut it. But, you know, the main thing is Tarkowski and Branthwaite, that partnership hasn't been there. And Mykolenko's suffered because of the injury and lack of fitness. So while we've added a little bit going forward, we've lost that solid base at the back. And, you know, the sooner we get those defenders back and fully fit, at least three of them, you know, say the right back will be an ongoing sort of week by week issue. But then until we get Mykolenko back to fitness, Branthwaite back and Tarkowski hopefully back to full fitness, you know, that is a concern.
No, I agree. And we're creaking behind that. I mean, we've conceded 10 goals so far.
Yeah, it's just so unlike us, you know.
Yeah, and, you know,
in this era, anyway,
I do think that it does affect your mindset, you know. And also, we haven't been in the position where we've been 2-0 up this season at all. So it's almost like it was a collective failure, really. I mean, I do think the manager just even making fives. The thing is, he doesn't like, it's almost like, I mean, I know this, you could correct me on this. But it's almost like he has a game plan that he works on in the week. And it's almost like, I wouldn't say he doesn't like making subs, but it's almost like it's pre... I'm not sure if it is always, but sometimes you feel like he's got an idea of what his subs he's going to make, and he's going to make them anyway. And the two... And just making two, to me, the game has changed. We've got five subs now you can make. To me, I would just make all five, just to run down the clock.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say, sort of to balance out the reputation he has about making either too late or just insufficient changes, is that, you know, you look at what he's had available in the past, and it's no better than what he's got on the pitch. And saying, you know, breaking up the play by making a sub, I can see that argument, but only if you've got, like, adequate, at least equivalent quality. You can't send on a player you don't trust just to waste a few seconds. You know, that's potentially suicide, but... You know, the counter argument to that is that now he does have some slightly better options, obviously, albeit, you know, some of his first choices are still not currently available. But looking at the bench on Saturday, the criticism for me would be that he did have at least adequate quality and quite obvious changes to make. You know, the more experienced Garner to come on for Irabinum. I probably also may have taken Harrison off and put either Young or even Dixon just on sort of right wing, you know, defensive right midfield, and pushed Seamus a little bit tighter inside and, you know, effectively finish out the game with a back five. And, you know, to not make that, I think, was a bad call on his part. But I don't think he doesn't like making subs. I think he just doesn't trust the quality that he's got a lot of the time. And as I've said, I think long term, we'll see, once he's got everyone back and fit and the new players are up to speed, we'll see if there's a difference in that pattern when he's got decent options available. You know, it's no good trying to make changes just for the sake of it when you've got 41-year-old Andy Lonergan making up the numbers on the bench, you know, but now you've got different options.
There is more of a bench now. We probably talk a bit more about the transfer window, but and I'm not saying just make subs for the sake of it. And I also get that sometimes if you make a sub, it can disrupt the team almost. It can disrupt the what your tactical plan is. But the thing is, there are occasions, like you said already in this discussion, like there are occasions when the other team are getting the advantage and they're all over you. You do have to make changes, whether it's tactical or substitutions. And I feel like we're a bit reactive, and I feel like he's a bit reactive. And
but there was nothing to react, no, nothing to change up until things started to go wrong. You know, I don't agree with just changing for sake of it. You know, there was nothing, complete control. And, you know, we'll move on to the...
But then football's changed if you've got five subs.
But you don't use them just for the sake of it. You know,
no,
just
no, no, I'm not saying use them for the sake of it. I'm saying that it's not the same as having when you used to have, you know, you used to only be able to have three. You know, it's not just not the same, especially if the other team are just literally throwing the dice and making all my subs, you know. That's it. And there is such little difference between the players at this level that the freshness... But anyway, we've gone over it, but, you know... Yeah. Well, I'm just putting a counter-argument. I'm not saying I agree with all of these arguments, by the way, but I do think that sometimes his in-game management is frustrating. And I get the reasons
why. Things about it on Saturday that, you know, I was disappointed with those two things in particular that I've highlighted. But let's move on to, you know, the good... You know, it's easy to forget the positives when you've had such a fucking atrocious end to the game. But for 87 minutes, it's the best I've seen us play in a very long time. And I don't just mean under Deitch. I mean, you know, under quite a few coaches. You know, the attacking play was far better. It wasn't all, you know, sort of silky smooth. And, you know, there's still a lot of graft winning the ball back and... You know, working hard off the ball and everything, but we looked a lot sharper going forward, and it is encouraging if we can get back that solidity that we had last season. You know, to add what we showed signs of on Saturday, you know, will be potentially a potent mix.
Yeah, I thought Ndai was really excellent. It just like giving us an outlet. You know, while I've talked about pace, I've banged on about pace. He has got pace, you know, and he's also got pace when he's on the ball, hasn't he? He's got dribbling ability. And
yeah, and he's also just dragging us right up the pitch. As soon as he's on the ball, the first couple of minutes, he was a little bit hesitance, but then he made one little cut inside, and then you could see, you know, he got the belief then, and every time he's on the ball, that, you know, it's like the mindset thing that, you know, certain players have, is that the first thought is, how do I get forward? You know, how can I use the ball well? By passing it, or if not, I'll just attack that space and drag my team up the pitch. And he's talked about being the kind of player that wants to get you off your seat. You know, he literally had us up on our feet at times. You know, it was so exciting to watch, something we've lacked for so long now. That kind of attacking intent and that kind of skill and pace on the ball, as you say. We haven't had it for, I can't even remember who we...
Mirallis, that kind of player.
No, he's different to them. He's so much quicker and,
I know. I'm just saying that we haven't had that, you know, we haven't had a player like that since then, I'd say.
But I'd say he's not even that type of player. I mean, you know, Pienaar would fit 40 yards on the ball away and die.
I'm not saying they're the same players. I'm just saying they were flair players, whether they were exciting players at times. I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, because you said you couldn't remember the last time. I wasn't comparing the two. Anyway, I agree. And Dom looked back at it as well, didn't he? Which was good to see.
Yeah, really nice finish for the second goal. The kind of thing where, you know, you sometimes question him those one-on-ones. We've said before, it's probably not his strongest part of his game, but really confident little chip over the keeper. Lovely ball from Dwight as well. It's another thing people questioned if he can play as a number 10, and at times I did wonder that myself, but in that moment, you know, he picked out a lovely little ball with the outside of his foot. Good to see us score a nice goal in open play as well. You're thinking when we're struggling, it's going to be all set pieces, and although the first goal was partially from a, you know, like the sort of second phase of a set piece, it was nice to see us just score a really nice fluid movement, ending in with a nice finish for the second.
I think we could see that a lot, that kind of three behind Dom, you know, Harrison, McNeil, and Dye. Maybe even Lindstrom comes into it when he gets fitter. But, you know, like the interchange of them, because they can all play in each other's position, can't they?
Yeah, the interchange gives options.
It is, because you could, like I've talked about before, sometimes, you know, Harrison might go on the left and Dye might go on the right, or, you know, McNeil even might go on the right, even, you know, because he can cut in with his left. You know, there are options there, and that's quite good to have options. And really, we have been playing with a sort of battering ram Decore, haven't we? Physicality and stuff, the 10.
Yeah.
To see us sort of evolve slightly is good to see. But
it is encouraging.
And then, obviously, again, Irabunim for 87, or, you know, for 80-odd minutes, he was really good. And
he was excellent.
He steps up, doesn't he? That's the thing about him, I suppose, is that in that last area, you know, that last period of time, he wasn't getting back as much. But then I feel like his mindset is to step up. You know, his mindset is, he is more of an eight, I think. He likes to press, doesn't he? He likes to nick the ball and get us going. And, you know, I'm not saying he shouldn't have defensive mindset as well. He should, but he should track his runners. But the problem is, it's like a young player. They're not going to be perfect, are they? And when you think about when we brought him in, people didn't even know who he was. That was a masterclass piece of scouting, that, by Kevin Fairwell. You know, you have to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
When he gets a lot of stick, Kevin Fairwell. So, yeah, definitely got him credit for that. I mean, he's picked up a player there for $9 million. He could be anything, really, couldn't he? He could be anything.
Yeah, he's really impressed. I don't think anyone expected him to play as many minutes as he has done this early. And, you know, probably wouldn't have done, I suppose, if Garner had been fit, but, you know, the way he's played the first few games, that mistakes aside on Saturday, you know, he's obviously going to be very much in contention every week as a first choice midfielder, because he's not done a lot wrong other than, you know, his part in that collapse. But as you say, he's a young and inexperienced player. He's going to make mistakes, and we've got to be patient with him, obviously. And I was going to say one sort of like note of caution on Ndiaye, as exciting as he is, and he was on Saturday, I do think we need to sort of temper expectations a little bit, because once someone has a game like that, I think we tend to expect them to do that every time. And I think he could prove to be like that sort of mercurial player who maybe can drift in and out of games at times, and, you know, against certain opposition, you know, his game may not suit, and because he takes risks, which we do want to see, he may give the ball away a little bit. And also, I think the style that he plays at, he will sort of get fatigued at times as well, not having played in the Premier League before in particular. You know, a season in France, a couple of seasons in the Championship. he probably will need resting from time to time. Not wishing to be miserable, you know, he's already my favourite player, I think, but just need to sort of bear in mind going forward that we can't expect those levels every week or necessarily for him to even feature every week.
No, possibly not. And, you know, like you say, sometimes I think at home, though, having a player like that does, you know, somebody who take people on. Like you said, we haven't had that for so long. It's just, it is a breath of fresh air. I agree, you can't put all your, like you said, on a different pod, you know, he's not Messi, you know, he's not, you know. But the good thing about him, he's a flair player, but he works hard as well. I saw there was a stat that he'd done a lot of interceptions and a lot of, you know, tackling back and stuff. So he is a hard worker as well as being, you know, flair. We often think of flair players as not being hard workers, but I think he really is, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I did think he was a good signing when we got him because he just showed enough for me at Sheffield United. And obviously, I know it's the Championship, but even in the Cup games against Premier League teams, he did show that he could, you know, create things and just offer us something different because we've got, you know, we've got some good players, but he's got that flair, hasn't he? We've got workman-like players, you know, in other areas, haven't we? Harrison and McNeil. I think Harrison has got some flair, but he's... And McNeil's got, like, the set-piece thing. But they are much more functional, hard workers in a lot of respects, you know. He is flair. But like you say, not every game will suit him because, you know, we're not going to have the ball all the time. You know, that's the problem. But he is an outlet. And I suppose that is what... I was thinking that bringing in a, you know, a winger or a person who's got, you know, either pace or flair or dribbling ability, whatever it is, would give us that outlet. But I suppose he could be that guy. And then there's also Lindstrom. We don't know. Lindstrom might take a bit of time to sort of adapt to the league, you know.
Yeah, I think he might. Needs to be a bit more patient with him, I think.
He looked a bit lightweight against Doncaster, but he did set up a goal. So I think he is a handy player, but it's just, you know.
Yeah, just needs a bit of time to grow into the league a little bit. But
he looks a bit wiry as well, so maybe he'll put some muscle and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, so
positives there, but, you know, the problem is, that was why I was so upset in a way, is like, well, you know, obviously losing the game, but it's like, as soon as you lose, it's like the positives kind of, not they go out the window, but it's kind of like you want it to be hopeful, you want it to be positive, and then it kind of gets crushed under the foot of losing, doesn't it? That's the problem.
Yeah.
But
let's move on from Saturday and sort of looking to the next few weeks. I mean, how has it changed your sort of overall expectations for the season or hope for the season?
Do you know what? I don't even know anymore, mate, to be honest. I'm just thinking this next block of fixtures is going to be tough, isn't it? We've got Villa away. Is it Southampton in the Cup at home?
Yeah.
Then Leicester away, which is going to be a tough game because, you know, they'll probably be looking for a win as well. And then we've got, is it Newcastle at home? Tough set of fixtures, that, you know.
They're always tough, aren't they? I mean,
they're chancing all of them, but, you know, unfortunately, I've got no expectation, especially when we go away. I've just got no expectation anymore, which is sad to say, isn't it? But I just feel like we're in this pattern where, you know, I have low expectation and then, you know, we'll just survive kind of thing. I know that sounds negative, but I just feel a bit, I don't feel like I've got any expectation. I just think, try and get a win or two and a draw or two or whatever. Just try and get points on the board at this time of the season, you know. Because you don't want to be going into the next, you know, international break at the bottom of the table, do we? So, but it's still early. It's only three games. That's what I keep telling us.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, what I was saying in the last pod, I can't remember if it was after the Tottenham game or just the Brighton game. I think it was after the Brighton one. To be honest, at this point, my expectations haven't changed. You know, we have to try and sort of separate the anomaly of the last 7 minutes or whatever against Bournemouth and, you know, focus on the bigger picture rather than those aspects of it. But I still, at this point, don't feel that we're in serious danger. I know we're bottom of the table, but, you know, we were at this point last season, and I think still hadn't scored, or we'd only scored the one at this point last season. Obviously, it's a shit place to be, and it's a bizarre record that we've got in August and that Dyche has got in August with other clubs as well. But I still think that we're going to be okay and comfortable sort of around 14th place. Obviously, if this turns out not to be an anomaly and turns out to be a pattern, you know, collapsing in the few games we managed to dominate, you know, then obviously it becomes a big concern and you would be worried. But as long as this doesn't prove to be a pattern, and, you know, we've shown the ability to react in the past. I mean, you know, think about the Chelsea game last season. We got absolutely fucking hammered. Was it 6-0, 6-1, whatever it was? Absolutely tore us apart. And then we went on probably one of our best runs of the season, and we were safe within a few weeks. So as long as we can learn the lessons from it like we have done in the past, then I still think there's plenty there. We will be okay, and I still think there are going to be three teams worse than us. I know that's a really shit metric for how to measure your own club, but I think, you know, that will not be the primary concern, because I do think if we can keep showing the signs of what we showed on Saturday, plus regain that defensive solidity, I don't see any reason why we can't gradually creep up the table and head towards, you know, a stronger position.
Well, yeah, like, you know, it did happen last season, and you often say that, like, you can't judge a season, you know, you can't really even see where you are until about 10 games in, really, or even Christmas, you know.
Mm.
So there is that. But I suppose the question people have, and I have been listening to some podcasts where they've been advocating that, you know, Dyche is under pressure already, and, you know, the next period is going to be critical. I mean, it's all critical, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Well, of course he's under pressure, because, you know, he's a manager of a Premier League club and one that at the moment is in a bad position. So that instantly puts anyone under pressure. And
but I mean, to literally lose his job. But
well, yeah, I mean,
The results
from
matter.
Being under threat of the sack, you know, that's the way it is. And as I say, you know how much I rate him, but if we're still in this position in 6 weeks and there's no improvement, then I'll advocate for him being replaced as much as anyone. But I still think we're a ways away from that, yeah.
Yeah, and there's things like Branthwaite coming back. There's things like the back four getting fitter. There's things like the new players being integrated. I mean, we haven't even seen all the new players yet, have we? So I think there's a lot of reasons why we can't really judge it fully yet until we've got our best team out there fully fit. And I think we will be okay if we get all of that happens, you know. It sounds like Branthwaite won't be back until a Leicester away. It sounds like at the earliest.
Yeah.
He may get like a few minutes at Southampton if he's back in, you know, back on the grass.
He's back on the grass.
But obviously Branthwaite will make a much big difference, because he's just so calm, isn't he? And he's got that mobility. I wouldn't say the rest of the back four doesn't have mobility, but it hasn't got as much mobility as he's got, and kind of like confident assurance that kind of puts the rest of the team at ease, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
And you know, and we've got, you know, I don't know if we've talked about the transfer window, the end of it, but obviously we made a couple of signings that may come in as well and stiffen up the midfield and maybe add to our attacking options as well. So, yeah, I suppose I'm just a bit of like, with Everton, I'm just like, I got no hope anymore. So, I had no hope on Saturday. So I was just like, oh, we're playing really well, 2-0 up. I was like, oh, I can actually watch Match of the Day tonight. And then that happened. So I was just like, yeah, throwing remote controls around and getting angry and upset. It's just like, yeah, like you said, it's like, why do they do it to us? Why does this club do it to us? It's like, they find new ways to, like, let you down. It's just, I don't, you know, like you said, we don't even have high expectations anymore. It's just like, can we just have a boring win, you know? Can we just have this league isn't actually, this league isn't actually that good. Why do we have to, like, shoot ourselves in the foot? We are, like, a proper Greek tragedy of a club, you know? But in a way, I suppose, there's, like, when it's good, it's really good. Because it's the club has got something magical about it, you know? As we saw at the end of last season, there is that. But when it's bad, it's bloody, you know, it's like bloody, yeah, like I said to you, PTSD bad, you know, it's like being through bloody war, you know. But, you know, it's not that extreme. But I suppose we are a bipolar fan base because we're just on the edge. We've been on the edge for quite a few years, you know, and I suppose there is that reaction because we're on the edge. Like you've said to me, there are a section of our fan base who are, yeah, they're negative regardless. Like, you know, we're going into administration, you know, sack the manager after 5 games, whatever. I suppose the issue is we need some stability and, you know, if we can just calm things down a bit, get a few results. And like you said, have a relatively safe season. Because really, I think now that squad should be lower mid-table. You know, we should be around the Palaces and the Bournemouths.
Yeah, I think so.
We should be around there, shouldn't we? I mean, we play Bournemouth off the park for most of it. You know, just the last bit.
Yeah, I think we should. You know, there's not really any excuse once we've got the full squad fully fit. You know, if that happens, then, you know, Dyche hasn't got any excuse either because we have improved it. And there were plenty of signs on Saturday that he's got a lot more to work with going forward. So once that defensive solidity is back or the personnel's back, as we have to see if we regain that solidity, then there's no excuse not to be moving up the table and getting fairly comfortable and saying, if that doesn't happen, then, you know, I'll be questioning him as much as anyone. But I just think despite the horror, you know, it's hard to keep your perspective when it's been something as extreme as those last 6 minutes. If we just lost it in a standard way, it may not have been as horrific, but to have thrown it away in such spectacular form, it does make it hard to keep the perspective, but
it stings. It's really galling. It's galling. It stings. It stings a lot, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to get over that kind of thing. You do. Like, remember Newcastle a few years ago? We were like 3-1 up, I think. We drew 3-3 in the last few minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah, remember. Under Ancelotti.
Watford, we lost 5-2 or 5-3.
Yeah, just like huge collapses, yeah.
We are like a couple, yeah. I don't know. Is there something like kind of a mentality thing almost in the club that's like a lack of, like you said, leadership almost? There shouldn't be. But there seems to be a fragility, like a mental fragility as much as anything. Because I feel like there was a bit of like switching off and there was a bit of like you said, losing your head almost, like going up, you know, trying to get another goal rather than just like keeping your shape and trying to run down the clock. Like other teams do when they come to Goodison, just like, you know, oh, I've got cramp, you know, try and break up the team. Break it up. Don't let the disaster carry on happening. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll park that. But
yeah,
I was just going to ask you, as a fan of Dyche, like, though, why do you think his teams, like, because they seem to go on runs of, like, bad form and then, like, wins. Like we had it last season. We had, like, was it 3 or 4 wins in December?
Yeah.
In a row, whatever it was. And then we didn't win for, like, what was it, like 14 games or something mad like that?
That spell, I mean, we have to sort of take that out, that sort of 13-14 game winless spell, because that was when the club was falling apart completely. There was all the threats of more points deductions and everything else going on. The players' mental health was being affected. Their focus was being affected. There was all the injuries and everything. So I think you have to remove that from any sort of assessment of him with us and in general. But there's things like going on runs and then, you know, hitting bad.
But he's always done that, hasn't he, with Burnley as well. I'm just asking why you think he goes on runs like that.
Look at most managers of, you know, the kind of clubs that he manages and the kind of club that we are at the moment. You don't get clear runs of good results. It doesn't happen in football at that level. Unless you're like one of the top four, you don't get these great consistent runs all the time. And you will hit, you know, dips of form, and then you'll hit peaks of form. And then there's all, you know, other extraneous factors around wherever you are, you know, like to focus on Dyche when he was at Burnley, always operating on a shoestring. Here, operating on a shoestring, lots of injuries, all the off-field issues. I don't think he's in any way unique in that he has teams that hit peaks and hit troughs. The only time he's probably managed to have a consistent season with Burnley was that time when they brought in Stephen Defoe and sort of changed the way they played a little bit and were more possession based and everything. But it's the level of football that he's at and that we're at. You're not entitled to, you know, consistent runs of of wins all the time. It's just, just the way the game goes.
It's not a criticism as such. It just seems to me it's feast or famine almost sometimes, you know?
Well, it is for most teams, isn't it?
Yeah, and where we are and with the kind of players we got are inconsistent. I do agree. I know there's reasons for it. I'm just saying that it seems to be a common theme over his career.
The bizarre thing is the August thing he's got.
I don't think it's bizarre, as I said to you on the last thing. I think it's because it's physical. His pre-seasons are physical. So he's concentrating physical. It's such a criticism. It's just my observation that he gets them really fit. But, you know, that doesn't necessitate to a... I mean, obviously there's other factors this pre-season. There's injuries, there's big injuries. I think those are the biggest factors, to be honest. Because, like, if we had had Branthwaite, I think we wouldn't have started like this at all, you know. So,
no,
and then there's factors like, you know, Pickford coming back late. He doesn't see, his head doesn't seem quite back into it yet.
No.
Injuries to Tarkowski. The midfield is now Garner, who, you know, bless him at his age. He's still a good player, but, you know, he is 36 now. You have to remember that. You know, he's going to make mistakes. And a kid. You know, so, you know, like you said, James Garner would have been started, wouldn't he? If everyone was fit, we know the team. So, you know, and half of the, you know, three or four of that team are out at the moment or haven't been available. So I think that's the main reason. But I do go back to, I don't think our pre-seasons are good enough. And I said before Dyche as well, don't think our pre-seasons are good enough. Don't think, you know, I think that's the wage. He almost trains a team to get them, like, the fitness up, and then it pays you back later in the season almost, doesn't it? That's how it seems to happen to me anyway. You tell me.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm not sure about the pre-season thing, to be honest. I don't know what he does differently to other coaches. I know he does focus heavily on fitness in the first sort of couple of weeks and then moves on to tactical things, but I think that's pretty normal. You know, you can give the players over to the sports science team to begin with, and you're only doing sort of quite light ball work. The first week or two, it's largely gym based and all, you know, taking all the readings and everything, and then giving them the fitness plans for the coming weeks and everything, and then you move on to the tactical part and the ball work part.
But somebody made a comparison. I mean, really, we can't really compare ourselves to Liverpool, but Slot comes in, apparently he's just working on tactics. I mean, I'm not saying there's no fitness involved, but he is literally a tactical manager. Yeah.
But, you know, the sports science team would have got hold of the players.
And probably first and again, of all. I know you disagree with me this, but again, they're playing like Man United, they're playing Chelsea, they're playing top teams. I know that we can't, in a way, we can't really...
Some of the best players in the world.
Yeah, we can't really compare ourselves to Liverpool. I mean, they're just on a different planet, but... Almost, you know, but like football wise, with the money wise and everything. But you can compare it in terms of, I just think we need slightly better opposition. That's my opinion, but I could be wrong. It seems to be a theme. We don't start well, do we? When was the last time we started well? I can't remember. It was 4 years ago, wasn't it? COVID.
Ancelotti.
That was when we started well.
Full season, yeah.
We win like the first 5 or 6 games.
Well, we were top of the table the first few weeks or so, weren't we? And then around the top four for a while before we had that sort of mid-season.
Which was crazy again.
Anyway, I'll go back to that.
We only needed like a win and a draw and we would have been top six or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Actually, I was talking to a mate of mine, or Jim, you know, as you know him from the podcast.
Yeah.
I said to him, oh, you know, Everton, you know, blah, blah. He's like, oh, well, who would do better? And he's got a point. You know, I'm saying about people wanting Dyche out and stuff. And he's got a point, but on the other hand, that is kind of like an outsider looking in, almost, like as if, oh yeah, well, Everton should be down there. But I did make the point to him that, you know, apart from this last 3 or 4 years, we were, you know, we were consistent mid-table top 10, weren't we, really, most of the time.
Yeah, but a lot's happened in those few years.
Yeah, I know it's a different thing, and Mashiri and everything, and... Anyway, I'm going off topic now. Carry on, sorry.
Yeah, just wanted to do real quick. We haven't spoken since before the end of the transfer window. So a couple of minutes on how you think we've done there. I think we've done far better than I expected, to be honest, in what we've brought in and what we've got out.
yeah, when you take it as a whole, we actually did quite well, really. I mean, we got in the midfielder we needed. We got in two wingers / number 10s in Undyne and Lindstrom. Got Mangala in late, didn't we, alone? He will definitely stiffen up the midfield. Although I'm a bit confused. I can't remember him much from Forest, so I don't know if he's a defensive midfielder or a number 8. I don't know what he is. Really.
From what I remember of Forest, he's just a fairly straightforward sort of defensive midfielder. You know, he's not going to be like bombing on or getting loads of goals or anything like that, but he'll probably be a very handy squad player.
Well, yeah, for like a game on Saturday when he can come on and sort of like, you know, physicality, yeah. You know, have physicality. Or for a game when we're away at Villa, you know, maybe you could come in, pack midfield, play three in there almost at times.
But it's just another option, another body, because we were a little bit short there, obviously.
And it's quite ironic, actually, because isn't he like he's often a sub for Onana at Belgium.
Yeah.
Which is funny, really.
But yeah, played alongside him as
and
well,
then but. Obviously the late one. I mean, obviously O'Brien as well. We haven't seen much of him yet. He looked, I thought, you know, it was only Doncaster, but he looked all right. You know, he very calm. But obviously, you know, there is a jump between France and Premier League. And
yeah, he's another one we'll have to be patient with, and he'll sort of build up his minutes when the circumstances allow it. But, you know, he's more one for the future, obviously.
Good thing about him, though, he's huge. He is huge. And that will be a threat in both boxes when he does play, hopefully.
But if you look at what we've done overall, I mean, you say we brought in Ndai for 15 million, O'Brien for about 17 million, and no down payment on either of those, I believe, and quite a, you know, heavily structured deal. Irvine, 9 million, with I think only like two up front, wasn't it? And then we brought in the loanies, and we've only actually paid a loan fee for Lindstrom, which is less than 2 million, I believe. And Mangala's got no loan fee. Obviously, Texter doing us a bit of a solid there. And the late, very late one, which I think you were going to come to, the Brozier, we don't pay any loan fee, and we don't even pay any wages until he's actually back fit, which is expected to be around October sometime. So we've spent about 42 million in total, if you take like the full fees in their entirety, and we've managed to bring in about 70, moving out Onana, Godfrey and Dobbin for fees. And then obviously we've got rid of Mopay and Holgate on the last day, which, I mean, that's possibly going to be the high point of the season, seeing those two out the door.
Yeah, I mean, generally a pretty good window, I think. 6 or 7 out of 10, I'd say. It would be higher if Brozier gets fit, it would be higher. But I suppose the only, you know, the glaring thing was we were after that winger and we couldn't get that winger. So for whatever reason, we just don't seem to be able to get the winger over the line. I think they were after that Neumar guy, weren't they, from Lyon as well?
Yeah.
But I don't think he even wanted to leave Lyon, apparently.
It didn't seem like it, no.
Because apparently he had a thing with, he had agreed something with Fulham, and he apparently was crying during the medical, so it's not a good sign, is it?
Really?
But, you know, I suppose that is the one glaring thing, that we've chased that all summer and we haven't got it. But at the end of the day, you know, like you said to me, we've got Ndiaye and we've got Lindstrom. They're two players who can play wide, and they have got a bit of pace about them. So at the end of the day, you can only look at what you brought in, and, you know, hopefully that is something we can address future windows, where we can get somebody with some express pace on the right and maybe some full-back cover. You know, we do need that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can't do everything in one window. And I think generally Kevin Fowler did quite very good job with, like, his hands tied behind his back. Basically,
yeah, I agree.
Money again.
Yeah, I think that's...
And the Brozier thing was quite a nice surprise, because we, you know, the window had shut and it was like, oh, we've got nothing. I had a sneaking feeling we'd have something, because there were just so many players available, weren't there? Especially from Chelsea. I had a feeling we might go for that Fofana, but in the end we've gone for Brozier, who we targeted for, you know, months or years.
Yeah, well, we've tracked him for a while, and, you know, that is a pattern that, you know, we go back to players that we've identified before if they become available further down the line. But it's zero risk, isn't it, for us? You know, no wages for now, no loan fee. If he turns out to be shite, he goes back to Chelsea. If he turns out to be to be really good. He could potentially be a bargain, but it's a good bit of last minute work that I think we weren't expecting.
Yeah, I think Chelsea, because the deal with Ipswich broke down, I think Chelsea just wanted him off the books, basically.
Yeah.
So we benefited there from the fact that, you know, he had an injury in his foot and it's kind of broken down his man. I don't think he really wanted to go to Ipswich anyway. I'm not decrying Ipswich, but I just don't think he actually wanted to go there by all accounts. But yeah, I think it's quite a shrewd one in terms of, obviously, Dom's running, you know, the big thing with Dom, he didn't move and nobody came in for him, it seems. So obviously, he's either going to go January or next summer, probably most likely next summer, for nothing.
Yeah.
So obviously, I'm not saying, the big thing with Brozier is getting him fit, isn't it? Because he hasn't been fit for a couple of years. If you can get him fit and firing, and you get the player that you saw at Southampton, then he could be, you know, an insurance policy of, I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, we've got four strikers now, but it's like, well, Dom's going though, so.
Yeah. You know, Chimitu, we want out on loan if possible.
Yeah, and then Beto, up in the air, or Beto. Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, he's got like a sort of 7-month audition, hasn't he, once he's back fit, and then I think we'll all see whether he's up to it or not, so it's zero risk. But one other thing I was going to mention, which I didn't sort of put in the notes, just occurred to me, going into an international break, and normally I'm not interested, but Lee Carsley, taking the England team for the next few games, that'll be interesting to see how he does, because he did great with the under-21s, didn't he? And he's brought in quite a few exciting young players to his first squad. So I'll probably be a little bit more interested in these than I normally am with England. Normally I just switch off completely during the international breaks and just waiting for the Premier League to start. But I hope he does well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, you know, the Spanish manager was the under-21 manager as well, wasn't he? So there is, and obviously, yeah, Southgate. So there is a clear progression there of, you know, under 21 managers becoming the senior manager. But obviously, like anything with England, it's like it'll all depend on results. He's got a really good reputation as a coach, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's been a few places, hasn't he? But he's obviously been the under 21 manager when they won the Euros a couple of years ago. Yeah, he's, you know, future Everton manager. I don't know.
Who knows, down the line.
You never know. Well, he might not get the England job, might he? You just don't know. But
this is an audition for him as well.
Yeah, the England job's one of those things, it's like...
the impossible job, as they call it.
Well, yeah, but if you get it right, then, you know, there's a lot of good players there, isn't there? So.
Yeah. Less interest in him. But okay, well, I think we've covered everything. We'll get over the international break and then... All right, we'll leave it there and then we'll come back in a couple of weeks. Okay, thanks for listening. Up the fucking Toffees.
Toffees.